Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to awaken to the truth of your soul? Welcome to today's episode of the Nadia Khalil Morning Show with your host, Nadia Khalil.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to today's show. Today we are rolling. It is already January 8th. We have finished the week and we've put on a day. That's going pretty fast. And I wanted to talk about lying today, because lying is something that is very unattractive to us, including the liar. My fascination is, how is it that the person who's lying cannot see around them, don't believe them, and they really think that if they just keep repeating the same thing and even adding more details, because there's such telltale points of lying, that they are like being favored by, they call it duper's delight. When you get excited that you think people are believing you, those are the extreme cases, people who can hurt people and lie about it and not be affected by that somebody physically or killed them or had, you know, some kind of altercation with them and say they didn't do it, with scratches on their arms or something obvious or holes in their stories or something like this. So I thought to myself, before I even start digging in to talking about what does the soul that's lying really want, I asked Christ, and usually I like to save Christ's nuggets for a little bit longer in the show on this one, because the minute Christ said it, I understood the lie. And he said, a lie is a thief of time, of relationships, of life. A lie is a thief of time, of relationships, of life. It takes away our time. It blows our relationships off the charts and being able to stay. And it takes life. And that lie, that once the person does lie, anybody, once they actually lie, what happens to us, and we've all been there at some point when we were young, when we were older, whatever it was, maybe not big, big ones, but we've done it to where we know we are at risk immediately of losing that relationship forever, ending their life by ending the relationship we've both invested in, or even just robbing us of our time. And what started me on fascination of lying was actually before I saw Christ, and then it got reignited huge recently when the O.J. Simpson trial came out, because he wasn't going to tell the truth if his life depended on it. And then he was acquitted. It turned out later on, I actually became friends with Nicole Brown Simpson's family. I met them. I've been at their house. We were friends. And I asked them, how do you cope with this? They said, we know he did it. We know he was on drugs when he did it. And we forgive him. And we've gone on, because we still have two grandchildren with him. And they meant it. They never said anything bad. They never said, oh, that, whatever. They mourned the loss of their daughter, family down, over it. Because they told the truth. They really meant what they said. He, on the other hand, lived a horrible life and probably was punished far greater in the outside world than he ever would have been secluded from that. And his truth may have been able to come out, but because his truth was not able to come out and nothing was ever able to be said and people still doubted him, feared him, weren't sure about him, it was no, he was a fallen hero, all of that. His life never got better, never rebalanced, never did anything because he took the thief, the lie was the thief of his time, of his relationships, and of his life. Think about that. So recently, we had a case in Colorado, which Francis also mentioned on the radio page, with a man named Chris Watts, who killed his wife and his kids. He had set up the lies prior, continued to lie, and at this point, with all the lies, he has told so many people, nobody believes a thing he said. Not only did he take the life of his children, of his time, of his relationships, and of his life, took it all away in that order, he has never spoken the truth about what happened. People are trying to figure it out. There's a lot of theories. But what fascinated me about the case, Colorado, they have a law that says that every single body cam, every single tape, every single document, every single thing relating to that case is public knowledge. So as soon as he took a plea deal to save his own life, he basically admitted to choking or smothering his two girls and strangling his wife and dumping them on a work site at work. And what he was trying to do was he met a new woman at work, had a new relationship, but he'd been having relationships prior to her. I think he finally landed with her. And he decided his wife, who was pregnant, and his kids, he did not believe they had a sustainable life. They were in debt. She was pregnant again. He wanted to run. He wanted to bolt. He wanted to erase them. Instead of riding out that wave of fear, he lived in that wave of fear, and he created, because he has extreme, I can't remember what they call it, like malignant narcissism, psychopath, because he was able to kill them and not even show a sign less than 24 hours later, or even 12 at that point. So what happened is, I studied those tapes, and many people have, over and over and over again. I finally maxed out this weekend where I stopped being, you know, I've seen them all and I've watched them many, many times over. I would have it on while I'm doing my work, just listening to what he lies like. Over and above his lying, I was fascinated with how law enforcement pretty much knew what was going on, but how they got to it, how they got him to do it. So it got me into studying further, because watching him give stories, and then there was another part of it that I thought was fascinating as well, was when they would catch him in a lie, he didn't feel stupid, bad, or say sorry, or again, didn't even flinch, just said, oh, well, yeah, I've been saying I promise. I don't know where they're at. I don't know where they're at. I don't know where they're at. And then they kind of fed him a line that said, hey, maybe it was your wife. Maybe, you know, she did it. Maybe she killed your girls. Maybe you got upset, whatever. And they started kind of giving him different scenarios. And then he started getting cornered, and he didn't want to say the truth, and he started blubbering and not knowing what to do with himself. Then he asked to see his father. And when his father came in, that's when he practiced his story. But, you know, obviously nothing he said was true. He had killed all three of them. But then the story was that his wife killed the kids. When he saw his wife killing the kids, the two girls, he went into a rage, killed her. And that obviously wasn't true. But then he goes, well, I had to kill her. She was killing my kids. And I'm like, my girls. And he was playing the victim. And he played the victim in his mind. He was the victim of his wife because he had to be able to deal with what he has done. But not so much so to clear his conscience, because he doesn't have a conscience. You can't, if you can do that and walk around and eat pizza at the police station and drink water and, you know, whatever it is you think you're going to do. People can think they can erase people off the face of this earth. But what they take with them is what they've done. Whether anybody knows or not, it will take their time, their relationships, and their lives away from them. Lying is counterintuitive. To lie is intuitive. You think, oh my God, I want to save myself. But when we actually do it, there's never anything good to come from it, unless you're actually saving your own life, because now you're negotiating. But at this point in our time, in your regular everyday life, lying breeds insecurity. It exemplifies blindness, delusion, denial, fight till the end, plate spinning, nonchalant, non-embarrassed or acknowledged of what they do, of what the lie is doing. I don't care who it comes from. So I wanted to find out about people who do something called statement analysis. And they listen to people who are lying all day long. They go and they investigate cases. And they have these different techniques on how to get a liar to confess without thinking they're confessing. Because it's the only way. And with this man, with Chris Watts, his arrogance was so off the charts. His blindness was so off the charts. And he just levers all these details that you don't need, and he tries to get you to look over here and tries to get you to look over here. And the funny part was he always assumed that he was ahead of everyone else because they were giving him enough rope to hang himself the whole time. Here his wife and his kids are missing, and he's joking, and he's, you know, trying to act like a good old boy. But that lack of remorse, I mean, I can tell you, I lost my son. I didn't lose him. He was sitting behind a thing in a store. But in my mind, I lost him at Disneyland. I found out what I'm like if one of my kids was missing or something happened, because I immediately started screaming his name. There was nothing anyone can do to calm me down. And I kept telling him, you don't understand. He doesn't talk. He doesn't, you know, and I was just all over. I could not breathe. I couldn't breathe. And I kept screaming, and I don't even remember who came around me to try to calm me down and tell me they've never lost a kid at Disneyland. And all I could think is someone grabbed him, shaved his head, changed his clothes, and was going to leave. Because I seen it on the news at some point. But I was inconsolable in 4 minutes. Inconsolable. And when they did find him, and he was just sitting behind one of the racks in the store looking at a box of Hot Wheels, I immediately started bawling my eyes out when I saw him and shaking. And I could not get over it for a couple of days. And that was just less than 5 minutes of time. So when I watch anybody explain themselves as opposed to where are my children and wife, there is no way that can resonate. That is not normal human behavior. They may not have to go over the charts as I did, but they also can't be so far under human emotion that they can just talk about everything else and themselves and everything they've done and them, and your family's missing. It just is so off, but the person can't see it. So what does the liar really want? The liar really wants what they wanted before they understood the consequences of such a lie. It's one thing to lie about what you ate if you're trying to diet, that's one thing, because that's a different sense of denial, but there's different levels of that. But what the liar wants is what they thought they can get, without realizing that what they were going to do to get it was going to rob them of their sanity. King on your spouse. And you're the one who lied. Let's say I lied to my spouse. Now, every time I look at my spouse, I know I lied. And I think, oh, well, it's because of him I had to lie. He can't accept whatever. And then I start getting mad at him because I had to lie to him. And I start picking fights and on and on and on. Because what I wanted from the first lie, what I didn't bank on, what was going to happen to me for lying. When they lie, sometimes they'll come and say, you know what, I really didn't do that. Because they couldn't handle the fact that all of a sudden, that lie that you thought you were just going to tell to get what you wanted, because you can see what you want and you're going to find any way to get to it. But that lie that you thought was going to give you what you wanted ended up torturing you. That's why jails are filled with either people who, you know, are going to fight till the end, or people who turn to God. Because once all lies are gone, the door is open to talk to God. Isn't that interesting? Watching Chris Watts took me to looking at a bunch of other cases, and one of them is a Denise Williams case, which was a verdict that came out on December 14th of 2018. And it was a love triangle. It was a bunch of high school kids who grew up and stayed in the same area, and everybody married to whatever partners. And then there was two couples that went out a lot, and the woman and the man of the opposite couples started having an affair. The woman in that relationship did not want to get a divorce, did not want her husband to have custody or shared custody of the child. So they came up with a plot to kill their spouses, but he didn't want to kill his wife, but she did want to kill her husband. So they ended up killing her husband, and he's the one who killed her husband for her. And then 5 years later, they declared him dead and collected on the insurance and got married themselves. And then 11 years later, they were violent to each other and started to break up. He ended up in jail because she pressed charges against him. And he told the truth about what happened and that he actually killed her husband. And she's trying to act like she didn't know. And then she said, no, but I knew. She had nothing to do with it, but she knew. and she was just found guilty. So it's like lies on top of lies on top of lies, and weird friendships. Like she was friends with his wife and ex-wife and all this stuff. So it was like kissing cousins in the South. So what happened was the lies got bigger and bigger and bigger, and they caught up with them 17 years after he was killed. Her husband was killed. And he gave details to the court. And he, the man that was in jail, he got where he was not going to be charged with the murder, but he's charged with something else and he's in jail. When he was on the stand, he was relieved as the day is long, even though he was telling the most gruesome details of how he killed his best friend. He was able to cry. He's just not the sharpest knife in the drawer, and he was able to kill someone. And yet, only talk about how he was trying to cover it up and stay at the end goal, that they needed to get rid of him. And they both almost got away with it. But the man that was killed, his mother, never stopped looking for him. He was an adult father, and the love of a mother never stopped. She never stopped looking for him. And she kept it alive in the papers, and she kept it alive everywhere. And a reporter saw the story and got intrigued and decided to investigate further and was shocked at what the police missed at the time and how they shut it down. And the wife of the man who was murdered is the worst of them all. She is the worst because until now she's denying it. Until now she's fighting in court, even though she was found guilty on December 14th, 2018. So that's, you know, she's now appealing and she just didn't know and she's the victim and all this stuff. So it's interesting to watch when someone's spinning plates. And once you just use the term bother or narcissist or whatever, because that just sounds like that trendy word that we're just slapping on everything. But the filter question is, are plates spinning in the air? So I was studying statement analysis, and this is what they do. Let's say they bring someone in, and one of their techniques, it's an interview analysis before they even do the statement analysis, because they need you to make the statements to do statement analysis. They give you plain sheet of paper, tell you or ask you, write down what happened. So then the person's writing down what happened in their own words, and then they take it, they read it, and then they speak to them in their language of how you wrote, and they use your own statement so that you will recognize what they're saying to build bridges to the truth. But it's the first step. End up where once they go through it, because they write it with resolve and confidence, they do give them enough rope to hang themselves. Because statement analysis and polygraph tests are not admissible in court. They don't prove without a doubt. But they ask you to tell them what happened in the statement, in the written statement, just what happened. And they say, well, where do I start? Anywhere. Start wherever you want, ever you want. Say whatever you want. Just tell us what happened in writing. Once they do that and they take the statement analysis, they will ask you again, what happened? And then what happened next? And then they'll ask you yet again, what happened? And then what happened next? And they said in the average vocabulary of a human being, there's about 20,000 words. So in a microsecond, you were saying, like we say, we used why it should be we or not I. Do you draw from the past or the present? And then they discover the analysis in how you're speaking. And then they say that a lie is a disruption to your thought. And so you will, even if it's a moment, microsecond, you will hesitate. You'll hesitate, and that's a sensitivity indicator. You'll divert. That's not appropriate in conversation. You don't need to divert. If someone asks you what you're having for dinner, you don't need to tell them how you got to the house to make dinner. All you need to tell them is what you're having for dinner. When people lie, they say, oh, well, I left work, and I stopped at the grocery store, and I bought broccoli and cheese, and then I went home, and then I cooked dinner, and that's what I did. And that's not what they asked you. What they asked you was, what did you have for dinner? Oh, broccoli and cheese. That would be the normal response. But people who have something to hide start giving you a lot of extraneous detail, and then there you go. You're going down the pike with them. Things like, I'm going to the store. Well, if you went and bought something, we assume that you got in your car, left, went to the store. Very interesting. Think languages. Instead of saying, my wife and I, Heather and I, we went and did this. Because now you're distancing. Heather's separate from you. She is not with you. It's very, very interesting. But lying creates a hormonal response. And after seeing all of this, I thought, how can I do this in a half an hour show? And I have such for lying. It has to be one of the worst punishments that we could ever inflict on ourselves, whether we're lying to ourselves, lying to people around us, lying in our relationship. It's an option. But out of all the options we have, it is the worst option ever. It's just the worst option. And someone who lies doesn't want to talk about lies. There was a man whose son kept lying that said, but you lie too. A lie. They're little lies, but I can't get close to you over them. And he said, well, that's a big accusation, as though instead of saying, oh, yeah, maybe I do, instead of talking about what was really happening, now I was the accuser. And he was the victim of me saying, but you lie too. Like, you learned that somewhere. So it's not that it's good or bad to anyone. The biggest torture that happens to us when we lie, they probably want to lie at times or whatever. And I say, but you're only hurting yourself. I could die tomorrow. You'll still be the liar. Don't waste your time, because you're going to go around the block to cross the street to get over that darn lie. It's just not worth giving up your time, your relationships, and your life for. I love you guys. I will see you tomorrow on Relationship Wednesday. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to today's Daily Dose of the Nadia Khalil Morning Show. To learn more, visit www.nadiakhalil.com.
No.